Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Hot Summer Fun Rock Radio here. Oh, sorry, wrong gig. No. That's not what we're doing. I always wanted to be disc jockey. You know, wouldn't that be great fun? Instead, it's the Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with my colleagues, Rosemary Armeo, professor at the University of Albany and investigative journalist, and Dr. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio and professor emeritus, etc. As I heard himself describe as full professor, joint professorship at two SUNY campuses, you know,
I was saying, look, I have all of these degrees, these honorary doctorates and all the rest of stuff, and yet I am failing in that I have no reason why Carson is doing so well in the polls.
Why he did well or why he's dropping.
Who knows? It's really interesting. Anyway, so we promise that this will give you a little bit of insight into media issues. We'll try to avoid politics, but wow, it's just such a crazy season, isn't it?
It really is.
But we were first asked to do film review. A listener in Slingerlands, Catherine, who also has a PhD, Dr. Shartok, says, I'd like to hear you address the new movie Spotlight about the Boston Globe and the pedophile priest scandal. Powerful movie, says Catherine.
But how many of us have seen it? I saw it.
Oh, we all saw it. So we actually have some, we speak with some authority here.
For a change.
Having seen it. As having pretended we saw it.
So did you like the movie?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. I was on the edge of my seat. I thought it was just great.
But you knew how it was going to turn out, so.
Well, we knew how it was going to turn out. That's why I like Westerns on television. I know how they're going to turn out also.
Mm-hmm. I'm in favor of any movie in which the journalists come out as the heroes. They did not look like idiots. And they actually came out quite humbled at the end because they have this blockbuster of a story that took a lot of intelligence to ferret out and courage to print. And the main thing you're left with is they were ashamed that they hadn't printed the story 20 years earlier when they might have.
It was very realistic in that sense.
It was.
That because good journalism is often an evolution. You get this part of the story now and this part of the story later. And I can just imagine.
Me too.
Can't you 20 years earlier, this kind of wacko lawyer, you think, a guy who's just such an advocate for his clients, giving you a story and say, yeah, we'll put that inside, meaning on an inside page.
And then forget about it,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It also showed how you make sources, how they develop. I like this one scene, the lead reporter has basically a meltdown and starts screaming at the editor. I don't think I've ever worked at a journalistic project in which that did not occur.
Really?
You're just so involved in the story and so emotional, you just lose all perspective and you just blow up at someone. And the editor just kind of took it, you know.
Yeah,
and
right.
I've been there.
You've been on both sides of that one, right?
Yes.
We haven't given the plot line and we're not going to give that to you, except to tell you it's about the Boston Globe doing a phenomenal job on pedophilia priests.
That is actually what Catherine said at the introduction to this thing. Her letter to us said that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
And you read it?
I did.
Where was I?
You were thinking... You're just going back
home. We often wonder that.
Yeah. In any case, but if you haven't seen the movie, you must see Spotlight. And it's true because so often in the movies, journalists are depicted as the pack of knaves going, what's your comment? What's your comment? And
with no ethics, you know, they sleep with sources, sleep with each other, have no real concern for readers. And this one's real. This one felt like...
Okay, I get that. But I want to ask you about something you just said, which I consider to be profound in my ears. You said, sleep with sources, that's bad. You're not supposed to sleep with your sources, okay? Right?
Right.
Okay, we all accept that.
But it's not.
But then you said, and they sleep with each other. What's wrong with sleeping with each other?
Well, you know, you have a group of young people and they're just more concerned with their camaraderie and playing with each other. They're not serious about their work. So no, I don't believe in sleeping with work colleagues.
Well, I have always believed, not that we're not going in a bad direction here, but that sex is a function of opportunity. And if you put people in a highly pressurized situation together and they're available, why not?
Huh.
Of course, not for me, married 45 years, but for everyone else.
Well, it's the fact is...
Wipe that smile off your face.
But the notion of... I think the thing is, in terms of dealing with sources, though, that is the...
Sources, that's easy.
Yeah. You do, you know, it's almost the same thing. You develop friendships with sources sometimes. I mean, reporters can get too close to a source without there being any sex involved, and that is a frequent and common problem. And there's also the problem that in terms of sleeping with colleagues, it is actually a mind meld of the pack of journalists who develop the same mindset. And that kind of thing happens often in covering a political campaign,
exactly.
For example.
The two reporters who have a Dolly Ansar supporting each other, defending each other. And what you really want is two different points of view. A little bit of tension between reporters and a team is a really good thing.
I never knew you were this prudish.
Do we think that there is, in fact, and do we see any of this in our current presidential campaign reporting? Let's go ahead and delve into that a little bit and say there has been such widespread, let's say, establishment condemnation of Donald Trump. Is the fact that the media pack covering him is, you know, you often get candidates and reporters on two different sides of the fence because the reporters are all pressed into little places and life is very difficult for them and so on. Is there a sense, do you think, that there is any unfairness in the coverage as a result of there being a pack mentality?
Funny question. Like, Trump is not getting enough coverage, favorable coverage. That's a new one on me. The criticism is that we're fascinated with him, that he's become a media darling, and his every word and utterance and gesture we cover slavishly.
But it's all negative, he would say.
It is now, he says, yeah. Well, I mean, he makes it easy to do negative coverage. Look at the things he's been saying and doing.
You know, I've always been interested in why people do things, motivation. Mm-hmm. So you got to, just to take it out of the press for a second, you take a look at the politicians on both sides who are criticizing Trump right now. You take a look at the Republicans. Well, they're all running against him. Of course they're going to take any opportunity to slam him up around the head if they can. Hillary Clinton checks in. She's going to run against him, or potentially she could run against him and she could tie him. And I think some people have gone to this. Some journalists have gone to this. She could tie him to the entire Republican establishment. This is how these people think, you know, about this. Mm-hmm. So now you take a look at the Daily News. Let's get back to facts here. They have gone so far in going after Trump that they are not to be outdone. On the front page of the paper every day, magnificent stuff. You're going to tell us about one of them, which is phenomenal. But here's Mort Zuckerman. He owns it. He's trying to sell it. And he has made a cause of the Daily News that we are the people's newspaper. If there's a black cause, we're going to be for it. And who's his competition? Rupert Murdoch, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. So motivation in terms of economics and sales and the rest have a lot to do with this, don't they?
Yes, but I think what is really surprising is that the Daily News has gone to this notion of front page editorializing.
Right.
I mean, tabloids have always worn their feelings on their sleeve much more than the broadsheet. When the New York Times did a front page editorial last week, it was a significant departure, the first time since 1920. This has been now widely discussed, and now other papers have come to do the same thing. The Detroit News did a front page editorial on Trump.
The New York Times, you should mention, was actually editorializing
guns.
Right,
yes.
Gun control.
And done it since 1920.
Right.
Yes. Didn't I just say that? I'm sorry.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So anyway.
I guess I wasn't listening again.
What the Daily News has is Bill Bramall, who's an editorial cartoonist. They put him on the front page with an amazing caricature of Donald Trump with a sword beheading the Statue of Liberty and paraphrasing the Martin Niemöller poem, First They Came, which Martin Niemöller wrote in an effort to incite people to pay attention to what was happening to Jewish citizens under Hitler. And the Daily News paraphrased it, saying, when Trump came for the Mexicans, I did not speak out as I was not a Mexican. When he came for the Muslims, I did not speak out as I was not a Muslim. Then he came for me. And then Niemöller's poem ends, sure. And there was no one left to speak for me. And it is a rather astonishing thing because it's very thoughtful, and it's not the in-your-face kind of tabloid front page that you expect, but mm-hmm. it is in keeping with the way the Daily News has been going these days and being much more of a, frankly, biased presentation, biased in favor of gun control and against Donald Trump.
Hmm. Did I say that?
I wasn't paying attention.
I'm wondering if Trump has this front page framed and hanging in his tower, one of his many apartments someplace. He just seems to appreciate coverage of any sort, negative or positive. He does not make the distinction.
Mm-hmm. And he doesn't apologize.
Never.
This is a guy who doesn't believe in apologies. And when I do my on-air Vox Pop and people call up and they say, this is all a trick. He's just trying to build up his business empire. He doesn't really want to be president. He doesn't even really want to know he wants to be president. And he's really got a great formula for making the press do his bidding.
And recognition of this came from Arianna Huffington, because it was a few months ago that the Huffington Post made great news by saying, we're going to treat Trump as entertainment. He's not a serious candidate. We're going to cover him only in our entertainment section, not in our politics section.
Sure.
Now they've reversed that. Arianna Huffington has decreed, nope, this has morphed into something else, an ugly
and
dangerous horse.
Yeah, we are not entertained anymore.
Yeah, we are not entertained.
I believe is the line. Yeah, that was a good one.
Well, it's interesting, though. I saw, maybe in the Daily News, I saw in one of the tabs, a picture of Trump with a Hitler mustache on him and a swastika behind him. So it's entertaining, but it's deadly serious.
Now, you know, American Jewish groups have often criticized any effort to link anybody else to depict people as Hitler, because they say that minimizes the impact of what happened in the 1940s.
Right.
But I have not heard criticism of this at this point. I think there is
a recognition that he is following that same pattern in a dangerous way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Still, on the other side of things, there has been interesting development in the coverage of President Obama, who has been virtually lost in all of the attention to Donald Trump. Amazingly enough, how can a sitting president in the midst of international
crises, right?
Yeah, be basically blown off the front page?
I keep thinking of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Just was it less than a year ago, where Obama is speaking and goes, Donald Trump, he's here still.
Yeah.
Let's not even think about him anymore. And look at what's happened
since. Goes on and makes fun of him. I mean, the president really did a put down of Donald Trump, went on and on.
Absolutely.
And Trump is sitting there listening to this. And
obviously not amused.
Amused.
He was not laughing.
Not at all. And what the president was doing was making fun of the tough decisions that Donald Trump had to make in dismissing this apprentice. Yes. And he said, those are the decisions that would keep me up at night, sir. Well played. And, you know, the audience is laughing and applauding it. You know, what a difference a year makes. You're right.
Yeah. Some commentators have traced Trump's decision to go forward in the race to that humiliation, that public shame.
Very interesting.
Although you could go back in history to Hitler, who was regarded as a joke.
A
clown by many people. A lot of Jews who should have gotten out of Germany didn't, because they said, he'll self-destruct. He'll never amount to anything. And that's why I think this is deadly serious stuff.
By the way, speaking of the president, Fox has suspended two commentators for using profanity referring to the president.
To use certain words on the radio, but Rex, perhaps you could sort of give us a hint as to what these words were.
Well, this was on Fox Business Network, a show being moderated by Stuart Varney, an analyst named Ralph Peters, who called the president, I don't know how to paraphrase it. Anyway, the first two letters are PU, total. And then a couple of hours later, another Fox contributor named Stacey Dash said the president doesn't give a bleep when she was referring to the president's Sunday night address, his address on terrorism. And it is quite interesting that this immediately, of course, drew commentary online because things are monitored in real time. And so they were suspended by Fox News.
I wonder what that was all about.
One of the commentators said later, I do apologize for giving in to my anger, But I feel like, you know, the American people understand where I'm coming from on this. My choice of words was incorrect, but
yeah,
no, but sentiment.
Yeah, but Rosemary, what I can't figure out is what the Fox role was in the suspension. You know, a slap on the hand is one thing, but...
Don't they have to? I mean, isn't their license endangered if they don't?
Oh, if you use certain words on the television.
Well, but it's cable. It's cable. I think you can, you could get away with it. And so they probably could have gotten away with it. But I think that, you know, if you're Fox, you want to present a veneer, right? A sheen of fairness. And an easy way to do that is to say, you know, we don't allow vulgarities. Look at this. When, in fact, of course, it's the sentiment behind it that is the bias implicit in Fox News.
Which they put in place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Fox News and Fox Business are cable channels not subject to government regulations that police profanities broadcast over the public airways.
Wow. Yeah, interesting. So we can't say it here. You know, on this program, we can't say it because this station is regulated by the FCC, but they are not.
Well, the problem really is that they have to feed the public as much red meat as they possibly can. And when you get into that kind of situation, you always have to be rougher than the guy before you. And so then they go over the line and they get into trouble.
It really points out the problems that Obama has in getting through to people. He is not profane. He is not overwrought. He very calmly, almost coldly in the view of many, explain why I think what I'm doing is right. We need to follow this course. And then is slammed as being indecisive, having no real policy, not being able to express himself with passion. It's scary.
Yes.
My favorite channel is Channel 58, the classic movie channel. And last night they played 7 Days in May. Now, I was going to go to sleep because I have to get up at 2:30 in the morning. I got caught in that thing, and there are so many obvious parallels to what's going on now, and you just pick out the characters.
Well, great fiction has always been a powerful truth-telling vehicle, and we try to do it with journalism, but it sometimes you need fiction to get across the realities. You know, one of the...
That was almost condescending, Rex, but okay.
That was good. I liked it.
It's true, you know. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith. And we are coming to you from Albany, New York, where we celebrate all things upstate. What a strange season this is, by the way, in terms of weather. You know, where's winter?
No
What's
snow.
Going on?
Oh,
we
I
were
love
told.
It.
We were told, by the way, this was coming.
Yes, that's true.
We were told it was going to come, that the first several months of winter were going to be benign, and then we were going to get hit as hard as anything we've ever experienced.
Yep, come January, it's going to be tough. Yep, and this explains why the fuzzy bear caterpillars were inexplicably divided. Some of them predicting
some
a tough winter, and some not.
Were,
yeah, no, it's the width of the black part. Yeah, yeah, you have to check that out. Anyway, we have here a story suggesting how Google. This is from the Washington Post. How Google is pushing you to vote for Bernie Sanders, and it is just a really interesting,
fascinating story.
A story about how the media operate these days, having to do with algorithm-driven search results. And the fact is that, let me see if I can paraphrase this correctly, it is that the algorithm focuses on a candidate's, if the top search result is a candidate's own Facebook or campaign page, it tends to be positive. But if it is a news story in the top 10, that is negative. And the result is that the algorithm drives actually more favorable results for the Democratic candidates, and particularly for Bernie Sanders. I didn't quite say that right.
No, that's fair. We get the idea because, you know, everybody knows you got a Facebook and you get certain stories come up first. Use my name and you get a lot of stories. But my question would be, so what we have to imagine, if we take this for real, that there's this, you know, a group of young guys and women sitting around a boardroom saying, now, how do we help our candidates with our algorithm? It seems far-fetched, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does seem
far-fetched. No, I think they do that.
Is that right?
And I think this is a campaign that's astute enough to realize that they should be doing that. They have gone after the youth vote, which is more likely to use social media like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely can see them, like, clicking in over and over again to raise up the
well, wait a second,
prominence of one side over another.
Well, you may be talking about what the campaigns do.
That's right, I am.
As opposed to what Google does
Alan's,
in order
yeah,
to.
Yeah, Alan's saying
Alan's
that
absolutely
this is Google
right.
doing it.
Yeah.
And Rosemary, you're saying, yes, I'm sure that the campaign is really engaged in social media strategy.
And by the way, a lot of people pay consultants.
Why would Google
big
do
money.
It, though? What would be their motive? Then?
Because they like Bernie.
Yeah, I don't think that's what's going on here.
What do you think's going on?
Well, I'm with Rosemary. I think that it's just sophisticated campaign work. Although, you know, there is this.
And some of it is real, though.
We don't know what the algorithm is. We don't know Google's
algorithm. No, we never do, and they change it. And I have to say, I was listening to you very carefully after my first few missteps on the show, Rex. And I think you set this whole thing up as being a Google-inspired tactic.
Yeah.
The original article that we're looking at is set up that way. It comes from Wonk Blog.
Which is a Washington Post source.
How Google is pushing you to vote for Bernie Sanders.
So you see?
So they're seeing it that way.
So don't you see?
I don't buy it. No. I mean, I don't see what they get.
But it relies on artificial intelligence, which is really opaque.
Exactly.
You know, we don't really know what this is. We just know that the pages that get a lot of traffic or have a lot of links do better in the rankings. And so that gets a lot of attention. So it's interesting, you know?
I do think that some of it is real, because Bernie Sanders is very popular among the youth vote that's going to be using Google a lot, and that drives up the pro sites. They're going to become more visible in any results that you get.
Yeah,
I do
but
think
it's,
some of it's real.
But you're not saying, Rosemary, that it's an insidious plot on the part of Google.
No, I don't buy that at all. I can't see. You have to have a motive for that.
So
Bernie,
we have to.
Money.
Is good point.
Somebody who owns or has an interest in Google wants to push him.
Well, that's right.
Who that would be.
That'd be the one I'd think of.
So we need to, before we leave here, go to the sort of media circus in San Bernardino, because we've not dealt with that in this program, which is when dozens of journalists went into the apartment that the San Bernardino shooters had lived in. A landlord, the guy who owned the building, pried off the boards that had hammered up the place by the FBI. And the first a couple of reporters went in, and then a flock,
scram,
including live coverage. And so the question would be, if you're a reporter, would you have gone in?
In a moment.
Of course.
I would have had it. I've said this before. I would have gone right to his sock drawer to see what was there.
I got a better question here. Rex, if you were the editor and you had a reporter who didn't go in there, you would have had his head.
Yeah, you have to go. You have to go. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is, I think going live is the difficulty here.
Yeah.
I think if you're MSNBC, who was broadcasting live, you
showing
don't know what
you're
going to get.
Showing pictures of the baby and all that. Mm-hmm. But if you remember, Andrea Mitchell, an experienced journalist and an ethical journalist, is on air and goes, I don't think we should be showing that. So even within MSNBC, there was a recognition that we're not doing this in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
My other theory is that the FBI knew this, allowed it, and wanted it to happen.
Why?
Because the FBI is pushing the idea that you have to be alert and aware and tell us when you have a suspicion. So for a moment there, the whole country is spying on those people. And this is what you should look for, and here's what it's going to look like. Let us know about this. I think there was an agenda there, and not the media's. I think it was law enforcement's agenda.
It's very rough, this whole thing, because on the one hand, we are decrying the, you know, the scapegoating of Muslims in this country. On the other hand, some of the things that the FBI is telling us to look for heightens one's awareness, for example, to the color of skin and way somebody's dressed. I mean, this is very tough stuff. And the media gets used in order to perpetuate this.
Right. It's the whole idea of profiling. It does make sense sometimes.
Yeah. Sure it does.
If it doesn't tip over into stereotyping, there's ways to profile that gets around that. But this is very crude.
And in this instance, the difficulty here is that there is a level of privacy that accrues to any individual, even dead people, I think. And the live broadcast of this was just a bit beyond what was appropriate, especially because at the time that they went in there, there was not a clarity that this had been, in fact, already cleared by the FBI.
Right.
So
right.
that was it was
and
just
it was it was
situation.
Very easy to blame the media. People don't like the media. They have suspicions. They imagine the reporters going through their own house. And so Twitter was ablaze that afternoon. I heard from so many people about, is this ethical? Would you do this? And then it came out later. You know, the FBI cleared it. The landlord cleared it. Of course I would go in.
So share your thoughts, folks. Media at WAMC.org is the way you tell us what you think about this. And we'll see if we can get back to that next week. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Rex Smith here with you. And we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Their policy is an acrobatic thing.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.